2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
And now, it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. A very happy Thursday to you. Show brought to you by Any Hour Services. No one helps more homeowners than Any Hour Services. Give them a call or schedule online, anyhourservices.com. That's anyhourservices.com. I'm rolling solo today. We've got Sarah Hossain back running the board. She's going to be helping me out. Big show coming up at 11:30, we'll be announcing number 18 on our Utah Jazz Top 50 list as that Jazz season continues to get closer and closer. The radio voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, will join us at 11:05 after a huge NBA day. Plus, we have a media day for the Utah Jazz coming up on Monday, so excited to break that down with David. And then coming up at 10:30, the top three stories at KSLSports.com. We're also going to talk to Bill Oram coming up here momentarily. Bill covers all things Oregon sports, and it is a very important day in Oregon sports history, so I figured no one better to talk to than Bill Oram from the Oregonian. But Bill, let's start with Montana football. What's going on, Bill?
Montana football's in trouble, Ben. That's what I would say. Nearly lost to Division II Ferris State 2 weeks ago. Lost to NAU for the first time in my lifetime. I'm concerned, Ben. I'm concerned about Montana football.
I honestly didn't know what they were doing this year, so I'm sorry to hear that. What are you? You're not a Montana State guy. That's the rival.
When I was in school, Ben, Montana won 13 straight Big Sky Conference championships. It's a new Big Sky Conference. The league has changed. Montana has to evolve, too. But instead, we're stuck with the old ways, Ben. Very, very sore subject.
I apologize. I didn't want to start you off on a bad day. All right, well, I was going to have you on to talk Oregon State football and a little Oregon. And, of course, we get the Damian Lillard trade yesterday. So things couldn't have gone any better here. Before we get to football, let's talk Damian Lillard. Let's talk the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah.
First of all, how did they, as an organization, handle this? Because they got dealt kind of a tough hand from Dame. Remember, he asked out right after they, you know, opened free agency. They found themselves in trouble. They'd spent a bunch of money, and then their maybe best player in franchise history said, "Oh, by the way, I don't want to be here next season."
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, trending in that direction, as you know, Ben, where, you know, the Blazers were trying to thread a really difficult needle for quite a while in terms of, you know, basically giving the keys completely over to Dame. They'd given him a contract extension that, you know, really limited them financially, of course, but still trying to bring in high-end talent to make them contend. And that was always going to be a difficult task. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I told them, you know, basically at a certain point as a GM, you have to start looking at the odds of being able to do what you are trying to do. And the odds were not good. And the Blazers and Damian Lillard both repeatedly kept betting on the long shot. And so that put him in a position where, you know, Dame finally asks out at 33 years old, you know, with that extension about to kick in, you know, not the attractive asset he would have been if he was traded 2 years earlier. And then to compound things, he says, Miami or bust. And I think everything that the Blazers did in terms of slow playing it, in terms of waiting, in terms of saying we're not going to just cave to the Miami request, ended up being rewarded. And I think it was handled smartly by Joe Cronin. And I think it's a bit of validation for Cronin, who has been pretty significantly maligned as an executive because, you know, he got the job first as an interim when Neil Olshey got fired, sort of rose to the position internally, was unable to deliver on the let's build around Dame plan. And so then when he pivoted to, okay, we're going to build around Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe by trading Dame, I think what he has done has been really productive. You know, getting DeAndre Ayton, who is a guy who is badly in need of a change in scenery, and maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe he doesn't, maybe the issues that he had in Phoenix continue to dog him, but I think it's a worthwhile risk for a franchise like the Blazers. And then the pick from Milwaukee, the swaps, and then the opportunity to go shopping essentially with Drew Holiday and see what you can get back for him. And he's going to be highly in demand, I think, puts the Blazers in really good position. I think it was a smartly handled standoff by Joe Cronin.
Yeah, you talked about selling off Drew Holiday now, which obviously is the next move. Are they going to look to move? Would you expect Jeremy Grant? Is Anfernee Simons a part of the future? Because as you talked about, that they already got Scoot Henderson, who I think was a great pick at number three. You've got Shaedon Sharpe, who looked like he was a star in the making. How many of these, I don't even want to say older guys, but guys who have been in the league 3 or 4 years, how many of those guys do they want to keep around?
Well, I mean, Anfernee Simons is on his second contract. He's making $25 million. I think that he can kind of be the adult in the room, at least with the guards for a year, but you're going to have to make a decision, over the next, year or so about how best to, if you can move forward with three guards in Sharpe, Simons and Henderson. I think pretty clearly Simons is going to be the odd man out there, but it doesn't have to be right away. Jeremy Grant's contract is probably not getting traded in the first couple of years, but I think it does allow him to be sort of the elder statesman of the locker room at 30 years old, 29, whatever he is. But he's going to be making $31 million a year. So, I mean, that contract is hefty. But as it gets a little bit later into that contract, does it become more attractive as the salary cap goes up? I think you would think so. And he just gives the Blazers some stability, too. And by the way, there was a lot of chatter this summer that the Blazers were doing wrong by Damian Lillard, that they failed him by not being able to build a winning team around him, that they didn't take care of him if they didn't trade him to Miami. And as a counterpoint, I would point to Jeremy Grant. That's a guy who I think we could have all sort of made an argument at the end of June. If you're not keeping Damian Lillard, don't tie yourself to Jeremy Grant for 5 years at, a huge money. And they did that in part, I think, because it shows that they do take care of their players. They do make sure their players get paid. They gave Jeremy Grant every cent he could possibly get. So I think that was a bit of sort of positioning themselves against the argument that they weren't taking care of Damian Lillard.
So let's talk DeAndre Ayton quickly, and then I want to get into the other parts of the trade, specifically Damian Lillard and what he has left. But DeAndre Ayton desperately needed a culture change, wasn't getting along with the front office, didn't get along with Monty Williams in Phoenix. What is the, I guess, how important is it that DeAndre Ayton pans out for Phoenix, or excuse me, for Portland in this deal?
Well, I think that this was a little bit of a low risk investment by the Blazers. I know Ayton is, on a max deal, gets, $35 million over the next 4 years, but he's a 25-year-old, borderline all-star caliber player in terms of production. He's going to have a bigger role in Portland. He's going to be playing with other young players. But, I mean, what did they give up, really, if you kind of parse this trade kind of as what Phoenix got and what Phoenix gave up? The Blazers really sent Yusuf Nurkic, Nasir Little, and Keon Johnson for Yusuf Nurkic, essentially, if you break it down. Yusuf Nurkic, was in and out in terms of productivity, in and out in terms of injuries. It's actually a lesser contract, but felt more bloated relative to his role and his contributions. I think that it was time for the Blazers to move off of Nurkic, especially if Lillard wasn't going to be here. Nasir Little, fringe contributor, Keon Johnson didn't play. So I don't think the Blazers really put too much on the line with Ayton. And the upside, again, for a player, number one pick in the draft just a few years ago, has been productive, did clash with the franchise. Again, goes back to, you know, a player in need of a fresh start. And, you know, we do know that, you know, big guys can take a little more time to fully pop. I mean, the talent is there. If you're Portland, you don't get that kind of talent coming through the door in free agency. Historically, it doesn't happen. So if you can be the landing place for a guy who is still trying to unlock some things, it's smart business. So I think that's what the Blazers did. I think that Chauncey Billups has, you know, a real gift when it comes to managing players and relating to players. I mean, I think there's other questions about his coaching acumen that we all have. But in terms of the people side of it, I think Chauncey is pretty special. And I think that might be the thing that that DeAndre Ayton needs after getting bruised up a little bit in Phoenix. So I'm curious to see it myself.
Dame had arguably the best statistical season of his career last year, minus the fact that he hasn't played more than 70 games in 5 years now, only played 58 last season. And they shut him down at times, you know, just to make sure he was not pushing it and they were trying to improve their draft stock, which helped. But where is he in his career and how long does he open this window for Milwaukee now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because, you know, as a player at that age, you're always thinking he's, you know, an injury away, you know, whatever that, you know, major injury is, knock on wood. And obviously you don't want to see it for a player like Dame, who's just so dang likable. But, you know, his game isn't predicated on athleticism necessarily, but it is on quickness and sort of that first step and, you know, kind of that wiggle, I guess is kind of the word you hear a lot of players use. And that, and kind of the quick trigger with the pull up. I don't know how that ages, and I think, you know, obviously his ability to shoot it from 45 feet and his constantly expanding range is going to be a factor. I think he'll be good for the next 2 or 3 years probably, and then I think you're probably going to see a pretty sharp decline as Father Time takes its toll. But you know, in terms of Giannis being, you know, a little itchy as well and looking for some reinforcement, I don't know how it gets better than Dame, because that to me for this year and probably another year, I just think that makes them prohibitively intimidating and so well worth it for Milwaukee. And I think, you know, for the Blazers, a good gamble that by 2028, 2029, Milwaukee is going to be resetting. You know, even if Giannis is there, all these pieces that have made the Bucks great around him, you know, will have moved on. So they will have had to rebuild completely around Giannis, even if he's still there by 2028, because is Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Damian Lillard still playing 5-6 years from now? It seems unlikely. So, you know, I think the Bucks got what they wanted, and then the Blazers also got, you know, what could be some pretty high value draft capital.
Bill Orms, our guest on the KSL Sports Zone. Quickly, one last thing on Dame. Did they do right by Dame to sending him to Milwaukee, and do you think they factored that in?
I think it is a factor. I don't think it was a primary factor. And yes, I do think they did right by him. You know, I don't think Damian was reasonable by pigeonholing himself into a one team, you know, destination. I don't think that made sense. I think it deflated his value. I think it did create some tension and hostility between the Blazers and Heat, and certainly between the fan bases and the writers. My God, Ben, I have never seen sports media so unhinged as over Damian Lillard and the Heat. I mean, have you? Like, that was one of the that was the most bizarre aspect to this, was how much people, you know, in our business seemed personally invested into whether or not the Heat were able to acquire Damian Lillard. I've just never really seen it. But in terms of, did they take care of him? I mean, this is a guy who has repeatedly said all he wants to do is win, that he's about championships. And you just paired him up with, you know, arguably the greatest player in the world, a two-time MVP, recent NBA champion, and a guy, by the way, he has stated that he wanted to play with in the past. So you did right by him because you put him in a situation where all of his goals can be fulfilled. And, you know, it wasn't Miami, but, you know, it's not reasonable to think that you can, with 4 years left on your contract, when you aren't a, you know, when you don't make sense for every single team anymore, that you can dictate your future down to a single team. And I think that, you know, it sounded like, based on some of the reporting yesterday, that over time, Damian and his representation started to understand that, and that they were good with Milwaukee. And so that little bit of context makes me feel even better about it. But even if Dame didn't want to go to Milwaukee specifically, from a basketball standpoint, you took care of him. You didn't send him to, you know, Timbuktu or whatever else, or a bad situation. I don't think there were any bad situations, because there's no team that is rebuilding or is going to stink that would say, hey, you know what we should do? We should trade everything for Damian Lillard. Like, that wasn't going to happen. It was always going to be a contending team, because those are the only teams that made sense for him. And I think this is as good of a situation as they were going to find.
I agree. I think it's a better spot than, you know, Toronto had he gone there. It's probably a better spot than Miami, in all honesty. I think he has a real chance to win a title now. Switching it over, talking college football. From Utah's perspective, I think Oregon State is a hurdle before they get to their bye week, and then they have this run after they face Cal where they play USC, they play Oregon, they've got Washington, three games over a four-week span. What does Utah mean to Oregon State this weekend?
Well, I mean, it's multifold, and you know, it's funny, just real quick, because of that schedule, that murderer's row you just laid out. You know, obviously, I paid a lot of attention to Oregon as well, and Oregon has Stanford this weekend, then a bye, and then goes Washington, Washington State, Utah, and then maybe Cal, and then USC. So I mean, it's a conference. It just seems like everybody has this stretch where they play all the juggernaut heavyweight teams in succession. And it's going to be fascinating to see who survives that. For Oregon State, I mean, coming off the loss at Washington State, there were a lot of questions. And it was a three-point loss, Ben, but it was not a three-point loss. I mean, that could have been a three-touchdown defeat easily, and it felt like it. So, you know, Oregon State has to be, you know, has to show that it is better than what we saw on the Palouse. And a lot of good teams have lost in Pullman over the years, and so I think there's a – I think we're extending a little bit of grace to the Beavers, but, you know, big time Friday night game, revamped Research Stadium, first time in a conference, you know, it's the conference opener in the new stadium. It's going to be absolutely electric, great opponent coming in, and I think really high stakes. You know, the Beavers won 10 games last year. It was only the third time in school history. You know, obviously have aspirations of exceeding that total this season. But if you open 0-2 in conference, it puts you really on the outside looking in of this of the Pac-12 when it's as good as it is right now, because it is tough sledding. So, you know, and you know, does DJ Uiagalelei remain the quarterback if you start 0-2 in the conference? I mean, they have a freshman that they love who they think is, you know, absolutely the future. You know, if DJ Uiagalelei isn't here to, you know, help you win a conference championship, or, you know, to win 10 games, or he's not throwing the ball well. I mean, that was the thing that I was thinking during that Washington State game, as they were just handing off to Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick, who are great running backs. But, you know, last year, you know, they had a quarterback who did that just fine named Ben Gulbranson, and he won 7 games as a starter. He was a great game manager. But he couldn't throw the ball downfield. So you go get DJ Uiagalelei to throw the ball downfield, and then they're not doing it. And then when they do, he's not accurate. So I think there are some questions about whether or not DJ is delivering, you know, relative to expectations and relative to what else they have among their quarterbacks. So I think that those questions are starting to intensify a little bit. And so, you know, the Utah game is imperative to kind of get everybody believing again in the Beavers, because I left the Washington State game, you know, in Pullman, feeling like that team was not of the caliber of the other four or five teams in the top 25 from the conference. I mean, not as good as Oregon, not as good as Washington, not as good as Washington State, clearly. Utah is probably a better matchup, you know, going to be a bloody battle in the trenches. I mean, Oregon State's offensive line is one of the best in the country. Great running backs. Utah's rush defense is obviously tremendous. It's going to be a real test of wills. I think it's a really fascinating matchup, because it's going to basically be a question of who's better at what they do best.
Do you think there's a fear at Oregon State that if they allow DJ Uiagalelei to open it up, he could lose the game with his arm?
Yeah, I mean, I think fear is probably reasonable. I mean, I mean, that is kind of the risk with a guy who has been a little, has struggled with accuracy, has, you know, as big of an arm as you're going to find anywhere, but he'll make some mistakes. He'll throw some interceptions. You know, his ball comes out really, really fast. I mean, it's not the easiest, he's not the easiest passer to catch. So you get a lot of tips and balls kind of, you know, up in the air, you know, anybody can get it. So I think there's some of that. And again, the strength and bread and butter is the run game, but you just want to be able to mix it up reliably. And, you know, there have been times where I think Oregon State has tried to get too cute or outsmarted themselves. If you were watching that game on Saturday, they had a 4th-and-1 that was really pivotal. And they ran a little play action fade to Damian Martinez, the running back, who it was over his fingertips. And you just say, why? You've got a 6'5", 250-pound quarterback. Why are you throwing it to your running back on 4th-and-1, especially when, you know, last year Oregon State had so much success on 4th down because they had Jack Coletto, right, who was a one-of-a-kind player, a former quarterback-turned-linebacker who could always get you 2 yards. And they don't have him anymore. But I look at DJ, and, I mean, it seems like every time he, you know, runs a quarterback draw or just charges up the middle, it's 5 or 6 yards. I think that they need to get more comfortable, you know, using him like they use Jack Coletto in those short yardage situations if they still want to be as aggressive on 4th down as Jonathan Smith has become known for.
Bill, I'm under the assumption that whoever wins the Pac-12 will go to the playoffs just because of the number of ranked teams they will have to beat to get there. With that in mind, yeah. Is it playoffs or bust for the Oregon Ducks?
I mean, yes, in that they... you know, this is Bo Nix's last year. I mean, they obviously are stacked at a lot of positions. And I think also, you know, it's going to get a lot harder after this year. You know, this is probably as good of a path to the playoff as they're going to have, because once you're in the Big Ten, you know, it's going to be a lot harder to get to the playoff, even an expanded 12-team playoff. You know, you're going through Ohio State, Michigan, you know, the real blue bloods of college football every weekend. I mean, also Rutgers and Northwestern, but you get the point. You know, this lines up well for Oregon, but again, are they going 3-0 against Washington, Washington State, and Utah with Washington and Utah on the road? I mean, if they do, they will be a top three team, and we'll be talking about them as a national championship contender, because that is going to be a really, really impressive slate. But, you know, playoffs or bust, I think, is a little bit dangerous, but I mean, certainly. That's what they're thinking. They feel like they solved some of their problems defensively. Bo Nix is playing at a Heisman level, as is seemingly every quarterback in the Pac-12, except for DJ at the moment. So I think that's certainly where their heads are at. But, I mean, they really – I mean, I hate to say this because you can't do anything about your schedule, but who have they played? You know, Texas Tech on the road was a really tough environment. They delivered, but, I mean, that was a game they should have lost. I mean, that was a – you know, a game they kind of stole down the stretch and, you know, had a great fourth quarter and another, you know, heroic performance by Bo Nix where they kind of just put the ball in his hands and said, go save us. And he did. But, you know, when you're talking about UW in the rain, maybe it's cold and blustery. Maybe we get some good late October weather in Utah at Rice-Eccles. You know, they have a gauntlet to run to get there.
And Texas Tech isn't very good. So that's a little bit concerning. Last question, Bill.
Yeah.
Do you have a read on what Oregon State and Washington State are going to be doing next year? We've kind of moved into Big 12 territory here, and it's not really a major focus anymore. What's your guess?
You know, I think that they're going to be patient with it. I think that, you know, maybe like the Damian Lillard trade, that there is no incentive to rush into it, to just jump into bed with the Mountain West. You know, they're going to let the legal side of this play out as they try to secure the assets of the conference and have as much of a treasure chest as possible. I think ultimately the preference is to absorb, you know, the more desirable programs of the Mountain West and the American into a Frankenstein version of the Pac-12. You keep the brand of the Pac-12, you keep the, you know, you keep some of the infrastructure of the conference and you bring in different schools. I don't know that that's a Power 5 conference. You know, if you're bringing in Fresno State, San Diego State, Boise State, Utah State, and then a few teams from, you know, Nevada, and then a few teams from the American, I don't know that you keep your Power 5 status. That seems a little unlikely, but I think there's a lot of value in maintaining the brand of West Coast college athletics, and I think that's probably the preference. but that's going to take some time to play out. And in the meantime, I mean, next year could be really funky. If Oregon State and Washington State are still kind of letting it play out and they're playing sort of essentially an independent schedule, you know, they're probably going to play each other multiple times, which could be kind of fun, but also gets interesting because there's a scenario where they do maintain power or they maintain A5 qualification, right, as a two-team conference. So Oregon State or Washington State could be insured a spot in the playoff for the first couple of years just because of how this is playing out and kind of the mechanics of the CFP. So a fun little wrinkle would be interesting to see. But I, you know, in terms of predicting exactly how this ends, I think it's anybody's guess because you don't know how it's going to play out in court.
Read Bill Orme in the Oregonian. Root for the Montana Grizzlies. Bill, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Don't root for the Grizzlies. I'm giving up on my Grizz right now. I'm down in the dumps. Devote your energy to something, you know, more rewarding.
Everyone turn their attention to the Jets here locally. All right, Bill, thanks.
Thank you, Ben.
There he is, Bill Orme, longtime Utahn, spent some time in Southern California as well covering the Lakers, and an overall very enjoyable person to be around. Bill Orme from the Oregonian. When we come back, the top three stories at KSLSports.com. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day. This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben Anderson, Sarah Hosayan, filling in for Jake today. You're always here, Sarah, but we appreciate you jumping on. Top three stories of KSL Sports, brought to you by Jay Brooks Jewelers. You can find them online, jbrooksjewelers.com, or check them out in person, Murray or Lehigh. We are very rapidly approaching the holidays. You're looking for a great holiday gift. Right now is the time to start thinking about Jay Brooks Jewelers. Sarah, number one.
Damian Lillard traded to the Bucks.
Yeah, an enormous trade broke shortly after our show yesterday. This trade has been in the works for some time, at least the Portland Trailblazers shopping Dame. I'd been talking about it a lot. I do it on the Jazz Notes podcast that we record every Tuesday and is available there for you. The Bucks had been a name that had kind of been sprinkled around on the periphery. Toronto had been a front runner. Miami had been a front runner. Dame wanted to go to Miami, but he's always had this relationship with Milwaukee. And after Giannis Antetokounmpo had started to lay kind of this soft trade request saying, hey, I want to be wherever they're going to be all in to win a title. And Milwaukee was going to find themselves in a spot very soon, including as soon as next summer, where Drew Holiday could have left as a free agent had he opted out, and honestly, they just wouldn't have had enough money to be able to bring him back or enough cap space to re-sign him. I don't know what the future of Chris Middleton looks like. Brook Lopez is still very good, but I think he's leaving his prime pretty rapidly. And at that point, they were going to have a bunch of aging players on big contracts and Giannis Antetokounmpo asking out. So I think they needed to make an ambitious move. And I'm glad they made an ambitious move and not a stupid move. I think Damian Lillard is the type of player who comes in and legitimately reopens their championship window for two more years, which is about all I think you can ask for with a player like Giannis to stick around and commit for. And then if you blow it up, fine. But you would rather blow it up having tried with Damian Lillard than blow it up having not really given it another go. And I think Damian Lillard opens that window. And I do think, and you saw it with Vegas, I do think the Milwaukee Bucks are the favorite now to win the title. And I think rightfully so. They belong in that conversation. The gap between Nikola Jokic is the best player in the NBA and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who I think is the second best, is probably not as big as it seemed last year just because Denver won the title and Milwaukee got eliminated in the first round. Giannis, at his best, fully engaged, when you've got the right players around him to support him, I don't think Chris Middleton was healthy at any point last year, is still an unbelievable two-way force, unlike many players we've ever seen in NBA history. He's capable of scoring 50 points in a closeout game of the finals. There are not many players ever who've been able to do that while also being the best defensive player on the floor. Giannis can do that. We know Brook Lopez is a perennial candidate to win Defensive Player of the Year. And the big question mark, or the big thing we always wanted to see in Portland behind Damian Lillard, was what would a strong defensive center look like if they had a Rudy Gobert type, if they had a big guy who could protect the rim and make up for some of his defensive lapses, and you just allowed him to unlock everything offensively because he is supernova. He has an ability to score 50 or 60 points in any game, any night, regardless of the situation, home, road, regular season, postseason. He can do it. He will be fully unlocked in Milwaukee, and I'm excited to see that. And along those lines, if we're looking at some of the other teams in this trade, what Portland got, what Phoenix got, Portland's going to have to flip Drew Holiday. What they get for him might end up determining the value of this trade. I'm not sold on DeAndre Ayton, but it's a no-brainer to move Yusuf Nurkic for a younger player in DeAndre Ayton, who you have team control of and actually still has some all-star upside, to pair with Scoot Henderson. I think that's a smart move. I'm not sure it's still the equivalent of the price the Jazz got for either Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert. I think those still set as the gold standard for blockbuster trades. And Damian Lillard's better than either of those guys, so it's just another credit to Justin Zanuck and Danny Ainge for the work that they did last summer, flipping those guys before it got too late. And my question for Phoenix is, what does Yusuf Nurkic bring? Grayson Allen played a little bit in the playoffs for the Bucks last year and was okay, but traditionally hasn't been a great postseason player. I like the idea of Nasir Little, but he's a fringe rotation player. That's not going to help a championship contender. And Yusuf Nurkic, I mean, the question behind Dame was, when is he going to get a good center? Well, the guy we were talking about replacing is Yusuf Nurkic, and now you're plugging him in to play next to Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and his job's going to be easier in Phoenix than it was in Portland, but I'm not sure he's that upper echelon level center that you're going to need when you're facing the Nikola Jokic's of the world. I still think they're going to have to run into Rudy Gobert in the postseason. And now there's a chance that if you do get to the finals, you're facing the Milwaukee Bucks that have a Giannis Antetokounmpo who can match up with KD. They're going to be able to throw, not that Dame's going to be able to defend Devin Booker, but I think they can negate one another with their scoring. And then then Brook Lopez is going to be a huge edge at center over Yusuf Nurkic if those two were to meet. I don't love it for Phoenix. I haven't loved what Phoenix actually did this offseason. I haven't loved what they've done over the last 12-month period. This might be another desperate move for the Suns that doesn't end up working out. Of course, we'll have to see what it looks like as the season goes on. Sarah, number two.
Number two, will Nate Johnson get the start again this weekend?
He was on Unrivaled yesterday, every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. You can check him out. It sounds like he's planning to come back and be the starter. I think, you know, we talked about with Jeremiah Jensen Tuesday, would you play Cam Rising in a game knowing you have the next week off, a bye week, and then you get Cal to come back? Or do you just rest Cam Rising regardless, give him another two full weeks and basically a third because he doesn't have to get on the field until, the 7th when they play against Cal? Maybe it's even later than that. You might as well just take those days. If it's been an injury like this, you might as well give him as much rest as you can. And with all due respect, it's the 14th against Cal, excuse me. So, you know, 2.5 weeks now. That's a pretty soft landing. Cal is not a great football team. It's not a terror defense. If you can bring him back there and let him prepare for that second half of the season, shake the rust off against Cal, goes on the road and plays at USC, home against Oregon, home against Arizona State, at Washington, at Arizona, home against Colorado. It's a brutal 7-game run. but it's probably something Cam Rising's going to be able to handle if he's fully healthy, and I think that's a big plus for the Utes. And then at that point, you might have Brant Keithy back. I don't know if you played Jaquindon Jackson this weekend. If you can rest him, get him back. Kyle Whittingham has already said that the key for Jaquindon is going to be getting rest on that ankle. If you come back at 100% the second half of the season, you've got as good a chance as anyone, including Oregon, including Washington, including USC, of winning a couple of those games. Maybe you only lose one and you find yourself in the Pac-12 championship again, but you can't lose to the Oregon State Beavers this weekend. And you might have to hope that Nate Johnson's good enough to get it done and Jalen Glover's good enough to get it done on the offensive side of the ball. Talking to Bill Orem in the first segment, he said there's some fear that DJ Uiagalelei can lose you a game with his arm, and that's concerning if you're Oregon State, because that's not what you were looking for. You didn't want somebody who was just going to come in and be a game manager. That's what they had last year. You want somebody who can come in and actually make some throws, but if he gets wily when he's making throws, and right now he's got two touchdowns, three interceptions in his last two games, and it's not elite competition, certainly not an elite defense like he's going to face against Utah, that might really bog down that offense. They really might not try to be too explosive, at least through the air. Which means it's going to be a low-scoring game, and Nate Johnson, I think, can still win a low-scoring game for the Utes. So if you're going to give Cam Rising rest, I do think Nate Johnson has a chance to get this win. Still going to be tough on the road, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I was just going to say, I think I could see them dressing Cam and having him, if worse comes to worse, and they're struggling. I mean, it hasn't been pretty and it hasn't been perfect, but they still have been winning with Nate.
Yep.
So I see them starting Nate, but having Cam there just in case things kind of hit the fan and they need him.
I wonder if the offense doesn't move, if they would mix in Bryson Barnes again. I know they were not super impressed with what he did against Baylor, nor was anybody, but at least he's a little bit more of a threat. They certainly feel more confident that he will take some of those deep shots that Nate Johnson doesn't even have the opportunity to take. Would they do that as well? I suspect they're not going to go in with just one option at quarterback, whether that's Cam or whether that's Bryson Barnes. I think they're going to try and mix it up, because I think they should expect to have to score at least 21 points to win this game. I don't think you're going to win this game 14-7. I don't think they expect to win this game 14-7. As good as that defense is, at some point these opposing offenses are going to break through. Even Dante Moore in a very tough environment, Utah, led an impressive drive and brought that game to within one score. At Oregon State, is going to be even more difficult. And I think the Utes are going to have to recognize going into that game that they're going to need to score some points.
Number three, Thursday Night Football.
Fun game tonight for us local fans. Jordan Love on his first start on Thursday Night Football, hosting the Lions at Lambeau Field. I love the Lions. I think they're a great story. I love Jordan Love. I think he's an even better story. And what he was able to do last week, winning his home opener, scoring 18 straight points after a pretty dismal first three quarters, I thought was incredible. A great close like that, and hopefully he can build off that momentum. He was so good in game one. Let's see how he looks now in game four as he starts to get more starts under his belt, but other teams start to scout him. I really like what Detroit has done. I think they're a legit competitor to at least make the playoffs this year. But I would love to see the Packers thrive under Jordan Love. I think he's one of our best stories that we've had locally in some time. So openly, I will be rooting for Jordan Love tonight against the Detroit Lions.
Talk about character development. I feel like he had the chance to develop, and we were hoping to see that with Zach Wilson, kind of similarly with Aaron Rodgers at the Jets, but that's not happening. So he's kind of gotten the short end of the stick, whereas Love got all that experience with Rodgers.
And I felt like Jordan overcame Aaron Rodgers a little bit more. Zach was so happy to let Aaron Rodgers come in, take the helm, be in charge for a year or two, and then come back and be ready to go. Aaron Rodgers never seemed to fully embrace Jordan Love, and the fact that they didn't draft talent or, you know, a skill position player next to him in the first round. They went and got a quarterback to play behind him and eventually replace him, which he did. But it never felt like Aaron Rodgers wrapped his arm around Jordan Love the way he did with Zach Wilson pretty quickly, like we saw in Hard Knocks. So I'm rooting for Jordan Love to overcome that and become the next great starter in Green Bay. I think that's a very cool legacy. It's a very lofty expectation for him. But his first three games have been promising. Exciting to see what he does tonight. All right, let's get into a view into the Big 12.
A look at the landscape of college football. It's a view into the Big 12. Brought to you by Peach Windows and Doors on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Last year we lost four games in a row against them. and had a really hard-fought game last year up in Morgantown where we were fortunate to win. And so we know it's been a tough game for TCU in the past. This is a good football team, a team that playing with a lot of confidence, you know, a lot of momentum, had a really good win against Pittsburgh, and then obviously a really good conference win against Texas Tech last week. You know, they're playing really physical, playing really hard. It looked like a typical, you know, West Virginia tough football team. So we'll have our hands full Saturday.
That's TCU head coach Sonny Dykes talking about their matchup this weekend against West Virginia. West Virginia's 3-1. I don't know if I love any of their wins. You heard him talk there. Texas Tech, who's not been very good this season. Pitt's never very good. Duquesne, it's not really a football team. But their only loss is at Penn State, and Penn State's a top 10 team, and that was on the road. But they have won three straight at home. They do go back on the road at TCU. I'm going to favor TCU in this game, but in our latest Big Pack Power Poll, Sarah, these teams went number 12 and number 11. So in our perspective early in the season, they're somewhat evenly matched up. I think we'll get a little bit more separation coming up this weekend when we see those two teams face off. A View into the Big 12 is brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows. Peach is Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Give them a call today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. I will be at Peach tomorrow. You can stop on by and see me. More next. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
For the best college football in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. It's a huge battle for the Utes as they hit the road to take on Oregon State. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson, presented by Any Hour Services on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, rolling solo today. I am Ben Anderson. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops or Instagram. A dud for college football tonight because they don't want to go head-to-head with the NFL. Middle Tennessee taking on Western Kentucky, Temple taking on Tulsa. And actually a decent game, Jacksonville State taking on Sam Houston. Sam Houston is technically winless, but they've played pretty good teams so far, including BYU early in the season. That game's only a 7-point, only has a 7-point spread for Jacksonville State. But speaking of favorites, tomorrow night's games are pretty interesting. We know Utah is on the road at Oregon State. Cincinnati's on the road here facing BYU. Oregon State's a 3.5-point favorite over Utah. That number's actually moved recently. Surprising to me is that BYU's a 2-point underdog against Cincinnati. There is some belief that Cincinnati's I don't know if I'd say a decent team, but a team good enough to go on the road and win against BYU. That would be surprising to me.
I feel like I keep my expectations very low for BYU, and because of that, I would not be surprised if Cincinnati came in here and shocked people. It's happened before with small teams,
sure.
Not as talented teams come in and, you know, BYU wins the games. No one expects them to win and loses the games.
They lose to East Carolina.
Yeah, they lose the games that they're supposed to win. So, I don't know. I could see it going both ways. I hope that BYU pulls it out and doesn't start conference play 0-2. That would be rough. And what other games are they... Like, this is a game that they definitely need to win because it's going
to
be rough after this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're 3-1 on the season. You lose to Kansas. If you lose to Cincinnati, first of all, you go into a bye week with the 2-game losing streak, which stinks, and then you come out of it on the road at TCU. Again, we'll see what TCU does against West Virginia this weekend. I suspect TCU gets a win there. That's going to be a very tough game for BYU. But if you start out 3-2, let's say you lose to TCU, you're 3-3. You've got to get three more wins over the last 6 weeks of the season. You play Texas Tech at home, who I don't think is very good. Maybe they start to figure it out, but they've already lost their starting quarterback for the season. You go at Texas, that's probably a loss. Again, West Virginia's playing better than I expected to. They haven't played anyone great other than Penn State, who they lost to open the season. Iowa State just showed over the weekend that they're capable of beating teams like Oklahoma State. They put up points in the 30s for the first time in what feels like decades. Oklahoma's going to be very good, and we'll see what Oklahoma State looks like at the end of the season. So I think you're right, Sarah. I know Jake would kill me for saying this, but this is a borderline must-win if you want to go to a bowl game. This is it's going to get dicey pretty quick if you lose this game.
Yeah, and I also feel a little uneasy because they have so many injuries. And going into the Big 12, that was one of my main concerns for them, is how are they going to stay competitive, because they are going to get banged up. And in the past, they haven't been able to stay competitive in an independent schedule,
sure,
let alone a conference schedule. So that's also what makes me feel a little skeptical, is because they have so many injuries, do they have the depth to compete?
Top end talent's never a question at BYU. They have it. They've got 16 guys in the NFL right now. They've got guys playing at a very high level in the NFL. They've always been able to get those guys. But yeah, what is player number 25, number 35, number 45 look like down the depth chart? And are they able to step in and replace the Ben Bywaters of the world if he's not able to play tomorrow night? That will be the big question. Of course, we'll preview those games as we always do tomorrow with our insiders. Michelle Bodkin and Mitch Harper will join us. Coming up next, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, will join us talking everything Utah Jazz, and Damian Lillard. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
For the best college football in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. It's a long road trip back east for the Aggies as they square off against UConn. Your home for all the play-by-play coverage of Aggie football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson, presented by Any Hour Services on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Tomorrow, Football Friday. Football Friday is presented by Utah First Credit Union. No judgments, just auto loans for all credit types. Apply online at utahfirst.com. That's utahfirst.com. Tomorrow, I'm going to be hanging out at Peach Doors and Windows. Love you, have to stop by and say hi. We're going to be hanging out from 10 to noon, previewing Utah and BYU. 2940 South, 300 West in Salt Lake. You can also always find them online, peachbuildingproducts.com, but going to be hanging out down there, so stopping by and see me, 2940 South, 300 West in Salt Lake City. Hoping to catch up with David Locke here momentarily, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. And coming up in about 25 minutes, we will have number 18 on our Jazz Top 50 list as we get very close to the Jazz season kicking off. Coming up actually this afternoon, 3 o'clock, they're going to be doing the Jazz Media Training Camp. This is something they've been doing for a couple of years now. Media members come in, they will run us through some drills, we get to meet the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. So we try and work through that and meet some of the new coaches and end up playing some games, and inevitably somebody gets hurt, and I'm hoping it's not me this year. And then coming up on Monday, we've got media day for the Utah Jazz. Again, some new coaches that were officially announced today joining the team as Will Hardy has finalized his coaching staff. Chad Forcier is going to be joining the team. Rick Higgins, Scott Morrison, who was the Stars head coach last year, and Mike Williams also jumping on this roster now, replacing Alex Jensen and some of the outgoing names. Several names still returning that you're familiar with: Evan Brads, Chris Jones, Sean Sheldon, Lamar Skeeter, Jason Terry, George Rodman, Anthony Beaumont, Andrew Warren, Matt Temple, and Becca Ward all return to the Utah Jazz next season. So a big growing coaching staff, and I'll be curious what Will Hardy's culture looks like with the Jazz now that he's into year two and is not just trying to keep his head above water, not just trying to catch his breath, which is something he had said happened at times last year. He was just trying to figure out exactly what he was doing on the road, you know, trying to make sure that he had all the peripherals done. Coaching didn't ever seem like it was an issue for him, never seemed like it was too big of an opportunity. But I think everything else that goes into being a head coach in the NBA was a brand new experience for him, and being just 34 years old, I think that was a major jump for him. So year two, some more of his guys around him. I'm excited to see what that looks like And I would imagine we get a chance to see him today as all the Jazz players are officially back in town, including Walker Kessler yesterday. All right, let's bring in the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, host of the Locked On Sports Network, podcast network, excuse me, it is David Locke. What's going on, David?
Not much, but I do want to share with you that I've been out of the country for the last 10 days, and this is better here than any place I went. I know it's some great places, but man, it's awesome here.
Where'd you go?
I'm actually on the top of Round Valley right now.
Okay.
Looking over at the Park City Yellow and Reds, and gosh, do we live in an incredible spot. I love it here.
This is so great. Where have you been?
Copenhagen, Venice, and Florence.
Oh, okay. I've been to I've been to Venice and Florence. I've never been to Copenhagen.
Cool city. My son's studying there, so we went to go see him, and then I'd never been to Italy before, so
What was your takeaway?
Three fabulous places, all with their own distinctive element. The history is incredible. The culture is, you know, deep and long, which is pretty awesome. And then that's 9 days in cities, and that's a lot for this kid.
Yeah, that's a lot. Anything you can talk to Simone Fontecchio about? Any takeaways?
I went to Venice, and I had no Simone Fontecchio sighting or even anything in regards to basketball of Italian basketball or Simone Fontecchio. I was watching, but it did not seem to be real prevalent.
All right, let's talk about the big news in the NBA. Damian Lillard moved to Milwaukee. We can get into some of the nitty-gritty of it, but your initial thoughts when you heard it, what was your first thought?
So I'm going to give you kind of a long answer. I knew this was coming, and I've been on a bike for an hour so I could think about it. So I think this one's super interesting because my first thought was like how basketball people like overthink things. So I do think like in basketball circles, like we all love Dame and he's amazing, but he's like really easy to love, right? Like he's a House of Highlights guy, every fan out there. So you have a tendency to kind of, well, he's terrible on defense. His team's been ranked in the bottom two defensively for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, he's been below 500. Isn't he a little culpable kind of? And then Drew Holiday is like not a House of Highlights guy and he's not on any TikToks, but like, if you're a basketball guy, you kind of love him. He's gets dirty and he's one of the great defensive plays in the history of the game. And you know, all it. And so like my first reaction was like, oh, I don't know. Like Milwaukee's going to miss that grittiness of Drew and Dame's got. And finally, this morning I woke up, I was like, whoa, wait. One of these guys is like a transcendent offensive player, Hall of Famer, going to be talked about for years to come. And the other's like, he's good. Like, he's like Mike Conley. He's like borderline all-star, probably been an all-star once, maybe twice. I think he was this year. Like, but like, that's what he is. Like, you know, like Mike Conley always got talked about, oh, he's the most under. No, he's actually was the most perfectly rated player in the history of the game. And like Drew Holiday might be too. Like, he's really good. And like, if you know basketball, he's really good and he's tough as hell. And talking to Vince Lagarza, who was an assistant with him last year, just loved him. Like, oh my gosh, loved him. So like, I think that, you know, when we're talking about that, but I just like on the other end, like they added a transcendent Hall of Fame.
Sounds like we may have lost David there. We will try and reconnect again. He is on the top of a mountain in Park City. So we will see if we can get his reception back. And I agree with David there. I think sometimes we get a little bit lost in the sauce of what a guy can't do and Dame can't defend, or Drew is able to be an excellent defensive player and is a borderline all-NBA guy and may have gotten some all-NBA votes last year. But at any moment on any given night, and really more often than not, Dame is basically Steph Curry. And when you add a player of that caliber, even if it's just for a year or two against Giannis Antetokounmpo, or with Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's a huge difference maker. So, David, continuing your thought, I just said, you know, more often than not, Dame is similar to Steph Curry. And if you have a chance to add a guy who I think you and I argued whether or not Steph is the second or third best player in the NBA, you probably do it without thinking too much.
Yeah, and I apologize. My phone's doing some weird stuff. If a call comes in, it just automatically goes to it. It's really cool. I don't know where you left off, but like, yeah, I woke up this morning. I was like, wait, what am I thinking? Like he's a transcendent player in the history of our game who's going to be talked about forever. So, yeah, you go get him. And then, I mean, he's the second best pick and roll player in the NBA behind Luka. Like, you spread the floor, have Giannis play the five, and have Giannis rolling to the basket. Like, that's going to be pretty tough to guard. If you switch it, you're dead. It's another reason why, like, 6'1" guards are just going to have a really hard time in this league. Like, you know, if Donovan has to guard Donovan, like, how do Donovan and Darius Garland guard a Giannis Dame Lillard pick and roll?
And, you know, they still have Chris Middleton and they still have Brooke Lopez, and they're going to be tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to be fabulous. And they were already the best regular season team last year.
Yeah, right. They're a little thin. Like, they don't have a backup point guard, so maybe that does or doesn't matter. And Dame he hasn't played a lot of games. Now, it's hard to tell sometimes in Portland why you're not playing games. They now don't really have a backup shooting guard on their roster. So Marshawn Beauchamp, who they do like but is a little out of control, has to really probably put it together. So they're a little thin. I mean, this is the new era, though, Ben. And probably not, we can do this next week, but like I was doing, I had a 10-hour plane flight yesterday, so I did 10 hours of NBA prep. And one of the things I did was went through every roster to see how many viable rotation minutes teams had. There's not a team in the Eastern Conference that has 240 minutes. Hmm. And there's not really a great team that has 240 minutes, other than maybe the Warriors. Because almost every one of these teams now has to have the players up top. You've got huge gaps. I mean, Phoenix, holy smokes. Now, I haven't redone them since they added. That was an important add for them. Other than the fact that Nurkic is cooked. Like, DeAndre Ayton must be a real bore.
Yeah.
Right?
I was thinking that. Because what I've been saying, and I think what everyone's been saying is, man, if you could get a Rudy Gobert type behind Damian Lillard or a center with a pulse behind Damian Lillard ever since the compound fracture for Nurkic, because he was pretty good before that. But if you could get that guy behind him, maybe they would have something. And that's the guy Phoenix traded DeAndre Ayton for? I honestly, I didn't understand that. And maybe I'm missing something totally. I've done that before. But I didn't get that at all, other than, oh, they hate DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, and honestly, in Portland, they didn't like Nurk much last year.
Yeah.
They weren't so pleased with him. And, you know, like, Dame's defense is an issue. Like, let's not ignore that, because I do think that aspect's right. But, frankly, Brooke Lopez and Giannis can clean up a lot of mistake problems. Or should be able to, at least.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the best roster Dame's played on by 1,000 miles. And the second best player he's ever played with by 1,000 miles. And vice versa for Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I think those two are going to blend together well. And I've always thought Dame's best comp, not as a player, but as a personality, or at least his story, was very similar to Kevin Garnett. And KG went to Boston and won a title his first year, because all of a sudden he was stacked with talent after being in no man's land in Minnesota. And I could see the same thing for Dame.
I want to change what you just said a minute ago, because this was one of the thoughts I just had while I was thinking about this conversation. It's the second, third, and fourth best player he's ever played with.
Yeah, I think that's fair. As
like,
far as fit goes
you're going
for Dame,
Nicholas Batum and LaMarcus Aldridge, but like in the last 8 years, like since LaMarcus left and Nicholas Batum left, like if you go look at who he's been playing with, like Mo Harkless left and couldn't make a roster. Al Farouk left, couldn't make a roster. CJ McCollum left, had a good 3 months, was bad last year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, maybe Brandon Roy for a weekend, but yeah, not much.
Yeah, right? So you're going back to LaMarcus Aldridge and Dame Lillard, right? Well, Giannis is better. I think Brooke Lopez is outstanding, and Chris Middleton, if he's right, is probably better than LaMarcus. And he's better than Nicholas Batum.
What do you think Portland can get for Drew Holiday?
Super interesting. So let's walk through this together. So Drew, where does Drew Holiday change the balance of power again? So let's walk through the East. Milwaukee's not going to go get him, right?
Right.
Okay. Boston.
He would help Boston.
And they all right, so then they would do what? What would they do? They don't have any young players.
No,
so
I don't think they can get him. Truthfully, I don't think they can get
him. Okay. So then we go to Philly. That's makes some sense as part of part of a Harden deal, or is it?
And you know, yeah, Portland doesn't want any part of Harden, and maybe it's a three-way trade again, but then you're just getting complicated. It's just getting difficult. We are 3 days away from camp opening up. In fact, I think the Mavericks open camp today because they play a week from today. So,
right,
yeah, it's
Minnesota
just
open camp today because they go to
Abu Dhabi,
Dubai. Yeah. Okay. So, and then I do think that they have to give up Tyrese Maxey, which they probably don't want to do. All right, so then we go to Cleveland. They aren't going to go for Jrue Holiday. So we're at the Knicks.
Knicks and Miami. And then maybe...
The Knicks and Miami both make a lot of sense, right? And they both have pretty decent packages. Miami's is not great. Knicks have a lot of pieces that they could play around with for Jrue Holiday, who's, you know, got the right to opt out. So it's really kind of a one-year deal.
Yeah.
There is this concept, though, that, like I think there's some big names to fall here. Now, maybe it's not Giannis anymore, but, like, I suspect... I'm the only person who's saying this, but I think Paul George or Kawhi Leonard could get traded by the deadline.
Huh.
If I was the Clippers, I'm offering Paul George to Cleveland for Donovan Mitchell right now.
Huh.
Like, hey, guys, he's not going to resign. He's not taking his extension. Here's Paul George. He's got a year left. And then the LA resigns Donovan and they can rebuild their future.
As opposed to waiting for him to hit free agency.
Right. I've always thought Donovan ends up in L.A.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. You've laid that out before. The Clippers could use Jrue Holiday. Okay, so I don't think they have the pieces to get him. And Minnesota could use him.
We go west, and Golden State could use him.
Yeah.
He'd be really great on Golden State.
Yeah, he would.
And that's Chris Paul and picks and Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah, do they have picks left? I honestly don't know. I don't know what they
have. And I don't think they can put Chris Paul with someone for a while.
Yeah, not until whatever, after Thanksgiving, when you can start putting multiple salaries together again.
So it's really interesting because, like, Denver doesn't need him. Phoenix would have just done it. Golden State's the third best team. Golden State's better than anyone realizes, by the way, I've decided. I think some of the exercises, Ben, I just said it. So I went through every roster, see how many minutes viable rotation players they have. Then I went through every roster's plus minus with only the players that they have left on their roster from last year. So you get rid of all the crap that they got rid of. Then I went to the big three on every team's plus minus. Then I broke down every team, top 10, top 30, top 50, top 100. Golden State looks on pace. We're missing on Golden State right now. They're really good.
I think the Lakers could also be in the running for him if they could find a way to get that deal done. I don't know how you get it done.
I'll tell you, my takeaways from my research were the Clippers aren't very good. Like, their roster just doesn't work. Like,
yeah.
You'll go play plus minuses with all their combinations. There aren't any good ones right there on that team right now. The Lakers, I felt a little, the Lakers are much thinner. The Austin Reeves love affair is cute and all, and he might be really good. He's their third best player, though. That's not great. Right? They only have two players in the top 100. They happen to be 11 and 12, but they only have two players in the top 100 players in the NBA right now. So they need Jrue Holiday.
It's going to take a while before they could trade Rui Hachimura because they just signed him. But you could do Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, and they've got the other first-round pick they didn't trade to the Jazz in the Russell Westbrook trade that they could potentially throw. It's an unprotected first for Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Austin Reeves is a pretty good roster.
That's a totally different ballgame, right?
Because
now you have three players in the top 30.
Yeah. I would keep an eye on that. If Portland's okay sitting with Jrue Holiday for a couple of months, letting him show Scoot Henderson the ropes of how to be a pro, what being in the NBA looks like, and then handing the entire franchise over to him. If they could get an unprotected first from the Lakers, that might be worth it because it will be post-LeBron, post-Anthony Davis, and might be something they're interested in.
Well, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, I think you're sitting down with Jrue right now and you're saying, hey, we'll see what people come to us with. There's a real chance the two teams are Golden State and the Lakers. Both of them can't do it for 2 months. So we need you to just be a pro for 2 months.
Yep. Which, by the way, I don't think that's going to be a problem for Jrue. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think that'll be a problem.
I don't think so.
He's beloved.
Right. I do think the subtle thing on Jrue Holiday was his ability to opt out and leave Milwaukee.
I do think he would have been gone.
I think there's a chance. There's a bunch of subtle things in this deal that the more I dug into it, and actually took the time to dig into it, I thought there were a bunch of really interesting aspects to it. So, like, one of them was if Milwaukee would have had to he's going to opt out at the end of this year, and they would have had to re-sign him. It's not like as the albatross that is Dame Lillard's contract, which I actually thought really was part of what was going on with Lillard, was that he wasn't that great a trade asset because of the contract so bad. And so that's what I think Miami was like. We're just not giving up a lot for him. And Milwaukee, when Giannis put the pressure on him, was the one team that actually was willing to give up a lot for him because it put there suddenly we're in a bind, right? And so that's why this trade happened. But it's interesting, particularly for Milwaukee, because Drew Holiday's extension isn't that much less and would have been just the same age, would have been just as bad a contract.
Yeah.
The other one was a little bit of the Nurkic Ayton money stuff is interesting on that. Like, you know, Phoenix was in that. They get off some, as much as I just think adding Nurkic is just really, DeAndre Ayton really must be a tremendous, problem for them to make that. Like, sometimes you tell on yourself, when Montrezl Harrell was like, the Clippers haven't even called. Oh, well, okay, you just told on yourself because you were pretty good last year.
Yeah.
He must really be a problem because for them to not even offer, for Nurkic, wow, that's a number one pick. That's instead of Luka Doncic, by the way.
Yeah, that's an all-time. all-time head scratcher.
And Marvin Bagley instead of Luka Doncic. I mean, really, both of them are all-timers.
Yeah. Yep. And Trae Young being traded for Luka is not a great trade either. Still not a great move all-time.
By the way, side note, one of my other big takeaways from all my research the other night was Atlanta's not good. Like, if you want my Vegas over-unders, I don't know if I could ever go under on Quinn Snyder, but that roster I could go under 100 times. It's just not there.
What do they set at? Do you know what their over-under is?
I think they're in that quagmire of, 45s.
Yeah. Ooh, 45's high.
Maybe it's a little lower, but, I do think there's something too. Here's what I think they're again, I don't want to bore people to death, or if we want to do this on an upcoming show, we can do it. We kind of have this funny 3 weeks of anticipation and no news. When you put together the Warriors, guys that are back on their roster, they all have some good guys, but they're plus 19, right? You put together the guys returning on the Boston Celtics, Marcus Smart off, you haven't put Kristaps on. Those core guys, they're plus 17. Denver, they're plus 18. These teams are great. Atlanta's even. And then you put Atlanta's core three together, they're negative.
Yeah. Hey, you said Mike Conley's the most appropriately rated player in NBA history. He just came in at number 19 on our Jazz 50. How was that rated?
All right, give me the I know you don't want to give me the 16, 17, 18. So give me 20, 21, 22. I apologize. I lost track.
You're fine.
I think on Derek Favors was in here somewhere, right?
20 was Paul Millsap, 21 was Derek Favors, 22 was Al Jefferson.
Paul Millsap got rated higher than Al Jefferson. That's super interesting. And Derek Favors got ranked.
Paul Millsap and Derek Favors were separated by a single point. It was the closest vote we had.
It seems like that's somehow appropriate. I do think Paul Millsap is probably getting some votes for what he did when he left.
Agreed.
Because Paul Millsap in Utah was not the player Paul Millsap was when he then proceeded to go to the next spot. I think that's probably too high. In the sense that Mike Conley had 3 years with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
First one wasn't great. Second one was the year where they have the most wins in the league. And the third one was, what happens? Does he get injured? The second one's his all-star year. The third one.
The team sours on each other. He's kind of in and out of the lineup, I remember. Not with hamstring stuff, but with just little things here and there.
And honestly, his biggest weakness as a player is he's too nice and the best dude in the planet, and he's not a leader. And that might have shown up in that year.
Yeah.
His fourth year with us, which is the first half of last year, is one of his better stretches. 19 is probably about right. I would think.
He's the first All-Star to make it on this list. No other player in a Jazz uniform has been an All-Star, has been on the list yet.
Okay, that's a great note. Thank you.
Lowest rated All-Star.
I'm really fascinated. You've done a great job with this. I'm really fascinated to watch the rest of it.
He's played the third fewest games of any player in the top 20.
Okay. Then maybe he's about perfect, because he should probably be ahead of Favors, Millsap, and Jefferson.
He was probably a better player. Yep. On better teams.
He's a better player, more important on better teams, third best player on most of those teams, and super important. You know, his deficiencies probably are why he's not, you know, had he been a little better, he would have been a six-time All-Star in his career, and he would have been number 10 on this list, and we probably would have played in another finals and two conference finals.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, here's the question. You want the fun one? Had the Jazz gotten Drew Holiday instead of Mike Conley?
The nice thing about Drew is he's probably actually a secondary ball handler, which might put the ball in Donovan's hands more, which might have been better.
And he's bigger.
He's
and
bigger.
He's better defensively.
Yeah.
I've always wanted, like, it's definitely 20/20 hindsight, and, like, it's not fair to Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck, and they are not as close together as people think they are. I think the trades are 16 months apart. Like, I had in my head for a while they were, like, 4 months apart. I was like, oh, my gosh. They're actually, like, 16 months apart, I think. They're not – like, when the Jazz first started talking to Mike Conley about Mike Conley, which was, you know, earlier than they actually made the Mike Conley trade, it was a little closer together. But – and the era of trades was different then. You didn't just go like – Milwaukee really emptied the bank for Drew Holiday in a way that people hadn't at that time, which made it a really different move. But I do think that give – and Justin actually might have been on Milwaukee's staff when they did that, frankly. I do think that John Horst in Milwaukee and probably Justin when he was there, I do think they did something that changed the league on the Drew Holiday trade, which I think is – it's going to be interesting to see – which is like, if you have the dude, in this case it's Giannis, you just empty out the bank to go get your next pieces. Mm-hmm. Like, your trades are not based on like, oh, that's a fair trade, I'll be reviewed well on that trade. They're based on like, I want Drew Holiday and I need him. And Milwaukee was the first ones to really do that when they went and got Drew Holiday. And if you remember, like, the Jazz were trying to go get Mike Conley at the trade deadline, and like, well, they wanted an extra pick, and we were like, well, he's not worth an extra pick. And we were probably right, but in retrospect, we gave up the extra pick. And frankly, like, at that point, now the league basically says, well, if you have a guy you want to go get, just like, go give it up. And maybe you can't do that in Utah because our market, Milwaukee's deciding to do it. It's just really interesting. Like, I do think the Drew Holiday trade to Milwaukee is kind of a tentpole moment in how the NBA trading stop changed.
David, we got to go to break. I appreciate you jumping on. Are you going to be there today?
What is today?
Media training camp today.
Media training camp. I thought it was tomorrow.
You'll be alone if you go tomorrow.
Oh. I might come down. I'll text me. I did not have it set up right. I thought I was going to miss it. I might be able to do it. Might not. Text me the details, or I'll text Megan. I'll text Megan. I screwed up the dates.
Okay. Thanks, David.
See you, buddy. Bye.
There he is, David Locke. Worst case scenario, I'll see him Monday at Utah Jazz Media Day. And then they fly to Hawaii to open training camp. It's already here. All right, when we come back, we will get to number 18. Sorry, that was probably a pretty casual conversation. That's kind of how David and I talk, meandering and not really going anywhere. I'm sorry, that probably was terrible radio. Number 18 on the Jazz, top 50 players of all time coming up next. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
home for the best college football in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. The Cougars return home for a key Big 12 showdown against Cincinnati. Your home for the best coverage of Cougar football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson, presented by Any Hour Services on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Happy Thursday. Thursday night football tonight. Packers taking on the Lions. We've got NBA training camps already kicking off today. Both Minnesota and Dallas are out there. You're going to see more teams coming up as teams playing outside of the United States in the preseason, like those two teams who will face off in Abu Dhabi a week from tonight, get a chance to open early. Everybody else opens over the weekend. So Monday, the Utah Jazz will open up and then head down to Hawaii. And we'll get a lot of news and, of course, have full coverage for you right here on the KSL Sports Zone. But as we do every day at 11:30, we break down the latest member of the Utah Jazz 50, the 50 greatest players in Jazz history in honor of the 50th anniversary. Sarah, let's get to number 18.
It's the 50th year of Jazz basketball, and the Zone is counting you down to this historic season by naming the top 50 Jazz players of all time, as voted on by the local media and you, the fans. And now, here's today's selection.
At number 18 in the Jazz 50 countdown, forward Thurl Bailey. Selected with the 7th pick in the 1983 NBA draft, Bailey ushered in an era of winning in Utah that has never left the franchise. The forward averaged 14 points and 5.5 rebounds, while the Jazz qualified for the playoffs in each of his 10 seasons in Utah.
The top 50 Jazz players of all time, presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. On your home of Utah Jazz basketball, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Number 18, Ben Thurl, Big T Bailey.
I think one of the things that Sarah notes there on his introduction, he brought winning with him that never left. He comes in his rookie season, the Jazz make the playoffs. And look, it's Dantley, it's other guys as well. Daryl Griffiths is there. But like, the Jazz make the playoffs. And they just keep making the playoffs. I mean, they what is it, 17, 18 years in a row they make it with John and Carl, even longer than that. They make it all of John's career. And then they've kind of stayed relevant as a result. And Thurl Bailey was a really big part of that and was a winner, obviously, in college and brought that championship pedigree with him. Was really good. I would argue the Jazz lost the trade when they sent him to Minnesota for Tyrone Corbin. And then, Thurl comes back really late in his career in the early 2000s. But yeah, an absolute legend with the Jazz in franchise history, but probably gotten a little bit underrated on the court for how good he was.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that point. Maybe a little bit underrated, 100%. Thurl was a baller. Not knowing, deeply the inner workings of that locker room, I would guess Thurl was a big part of it and a big part of any locker room that he'd be in. He just has one of those personalities. Easy guy to be around, easy guy to follow from a leadership standpoint. Before his time from, like, technically, I back in the day, you call him a small forward. Yep. Thurl's big.
7 feet tall.
Thurl's big,
6'11",
and long
tall.
And athletic. And I wonder if Thurl would have been a far more legendary player if he would have played a little bit later, when his body type and that sort of thing were much more valued than they were in the old school rough and tumble NBA.
Thurl ranks among the Jazz all-time leader in points, where he's fifth in games played, excuse me, sixth in minutes played, fifth in field goals made, seventh in free throws made, eighth in rebounds, sixth in blocks, ninth in blocks per game. Like, again, to this point, I think if Thurl is just like, I see him around the arena. Oh, he's a beloved by everybody. Like, he was a baller.
No, he was great.
Thurl could really play and probably should have won Sixth Man of the Year in the late 80s. Jordan Clarkson shouldn't have been the first Jazz player ever to win Sixth Man of the Year. Thurl should have won it one year.
18's low for Thurl.
I think Thurl lost by, like, literally one vote a Sixth Man of the Year race. So I agree with you. Thurl's a really, really great player. I was glad to see him this high on the list.
And by the way, a great broadcaster, too.
Thurl's
always
awesome.
Always has been a great, great broadcaster. So, Thurl Bailey, number 18.
Thurl Bailey, very well deserved here, and a guy who I will admit, you know, talking there with Jake and appreciate knocking those out with Jake last week, been able to keep that podcast going with him. And of course, you'll be able to get all of these Jazz 50 players in one enormous podcast when this is all wrapped up and done, a fun project that we've been able to do. Thurl was better as a player than I think he gets credit for in memory for the Jazz. Again, in 1987, 1988, 1988, 1989, when John and Carl were fully taken over that team and that team was emerging as a real threat in the West, Thurl was averaging 19.5 points and 6 rebounds and was coming off the bench. He only started 13 of those games. I mean, that is an absolute high-level player right in that conversation with Jordan Clarkson as the best second unit guy the team has ever had. So a shout out to Thurl Bailey. And then the other part of it that I hadn't realized linked so closely to his career, the Jazz win 30 games in 82-83. It's why they didn't end up with a very good, or it's why they ended up with a great draft pick, excuse me. And they pick Thurl Bailey to come in. Bailey comes in and the Jazz jump up 15 wins. And Thurl's a huge part of that rotation and is playing almost immediately. He brought that after winning a title at NC State. So a big shout out to Thurl Bailey and everything he's done for the Utah Jazz. And cool to see him end up on this list. Maybe a controversial player coming up tomorrow, so make sure you will stay tuned for that as well. But Sarah, right now it's time to get to a view into the Pac-12.
Looking into the biggest storylines across college football. It's a view into the Pac-12 brought to you by Peach Windows and Doors on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's been good for them. Something that Colorado's needed and haven't had in a while. And Deion and his son and, you know, Travis and all those other players have done a good job making that side of the world and that stadium and all of that very exciting. It'd be a good game and really excited to get out there, go versus the defense, our defense go versus their offense, and, you know, to have the crowd roaring at us.
The entire college football world, as if they weren't already, will once again be focused on Boulder, Colorado, but more so than even in the past, as Caleb Williams, a lot of people's favorite to repeat, as the Heisman Trophy winner heads with USC to face Deion Sanders and Colorado. Sarah, this would be the best upset in all of college football this season.
I want it so badly.
I would love it. And I have to admit, I've fully flipped. I'm just a Colorado fan now. After everything that happened with Oregon last week, I left a really bad taste in my mouth. Like, Colorado's not good. I never expected Colorado to be a 9 or a 10-win team. I was kind of slow to buy the hype. Then everyone wanted to bury him. I'm way back in on Colorado.
Yeah, I'm a big Deion fan. Like, yeah, he says things sometimes that make you kind of cringe. But for the most part, like, he's an amazing person. He legitimately wants the best for those guys.
Yes.
And he doesn't need to be coaching. He doesn't,
correct,
in all honesty. But he's doing it because he loves the players and he wants to improve the sport, and he is. So I don't know if I'm, like, all in on Colorado. Like you said, I don't think they're going to have necessarily this a crazy season.
They're
obviously
not going to win the
Pac-12. Undefeated. But I'm not a USC fan, so I really, really want them to show up and, I think, at least compete. I would love to see them win.
Has Deion said anything more cringy than anything that Dan Lanning said in those videos that we saw from Oregon, or what Lincoln Riley said last year when he got to USC and kind of all the changes he expected to make and buying all the players, which is fine. That's the modern day of college football. That's the rules. Lincoln Riley's playing by the rules. Deion's not doing anything different than those guys. He says it a little bit louder, but he's saying the exact same things. And the only reason it's louder is because someone's putting a microphone in front of his face.
Yeah, it's Deion.
It's
so people are going to pay attention a little more because of his stature as a person, not just a coach.
I would love to see this game in the 40s. I would love to see this offense, and maybe they just can't do it because they've got the injuries and the offensive line isn't there yet and the running game isn't quite there. But I would love to see Shedeur Sanders and this offense really expose what I think a lot of people believe, including myself, are some of the weaknesses on that USC defense, and have this game a shootout like the TCU game was as well.
Yeah, I could see it being high scoring because both defenses are not the best, especially
right
now that they don't have Travis Hunter on Colorado's team. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Did you see the news come out about the text between Travis Hunter and Deion Sanders? Just another reason why I love Deion.
Yeah.
He's like, this game isn't as more as important as your future.
Right.
So it's okay. You're
You'll
not
be
playing.
The number one pick. Sit out another week. Yes, we could use you, but it's more important that you're healthy and ready to go. No, I'm with you. I've liked Deion as the coach. I get it. He knows how to use the media as a tool. He absolutely does use the media as a tool. I get why that turns some people off. I do think he's legitimately a pretty good coach. And, you know, he's found a way to accrue talent the same way Lincoln Riley has accrued talent. Is Lincoln Riley a great coach? I don't know. He doesn't win a title every year, and he's got the best rosters in college football, along with the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world, and he's not winning at that level. Maybe Deion can get there if he has a chance to recruit that much talent to Colorado in the coming seasons. A view into the Pac-12, brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, where I will be hanging out tomorrow. Peach is Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Give them a call today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, 801-566-1255. Or as I said, come and see me tomorrow. I will be there live from 10 to noon, 2940 South, 300 West. Check out the beautiful showroom. We'll be hanging out, stuff to give away. It's usually treats. It's going to be a fun time. Stop on by and say hi. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
For the best college football in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. It's a huge battle for the Utes as they hit the road to take on Oregon State. Your home for the best coverage of Utah football is right here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson, presented by Any Hour Services on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Fun show today. We don't usually roll solo, but Sarah, always there to help. Appreciate your help today. Appreciate Bill Orem jumping on, talking everything. Damon Lillard did the same with David Locke, talked a little Utah Jazz basketball as well. You can always go find those interviews and the entire show at KSLSports.com. Just look under podcast. You can find our show, DJ and PK, Hans and Scotty, and Unrivaled as well, plus of all the team-specific podcasts we do. A ton of info there. Plus the Morning After podcast, which you can't miss on Sunday mornings, which apparently has a new sponsor now. So shout out to Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd for picking up a new sponsor with that. Speaking of which, Hans and Scotty coming up next. I'll be at Peach Doors and Windows tomorrow. Stop on by and see me. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.